Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rabona Podcast. I'm Musa Konga. I'm joined again by Ryan Hun and Michael Da Silva. Hi guys.
Hey.
Hello.
This week we'll be discussing turning points, two clubs and a national league in a process of changing into something quite exciting and different. Starting with Manchester United and Jose Mourinho's situation with Alexis Sanchez. So what do we think of that team?
Well, it was another defeat for United. No Sanchez, which was the headline grabber. No Lingard as well. It seems like there's a little bit of revolt at United.
The worst thing is when you said it's another defeat, my first question was which defeat? Because we lost the derby in the Carabao Cup.
Yeah.
And we lost to West Ham, and both defeats were utterly deserved.
Yeah, I mean, the performance against West Ham was dire. It was so poor. Pogba was withdrawn after an hour or so. There's just no inspiration, no ideas. The defence are not functioning. De Gea looks utterly frustrated. And no one seems to... I mean, I don't want to say he's lost the dressing room, but there doesn't seem to be much love for Mourinho.
Yeah, if I was a United fan, the thing I'd be concerned about the most is not necessarily those two defeats in terms of the actual results. It's the fact that they've been outplayed in both games by a championship club and a West Ham side who, you know, apart from the Everton game, have really struggled to click the season. Admittedly, they are getting a lot better, but the team selection, again, I think we covered it after the Spurs game, where he decided to go three at the back with Ander Herrera as the third centre-back.
He played McTominay. Scott McTominay played as a centre-back against West Ham.
Mm. When there was no place for Bailly at all, which is really baffling.
There's times I think to myself that Jose Mourinho has been cursed with being world-class at a job that he doesn't ultimately enjoy all that much. Because being a football man, I mean, some might say that's a bit dramatic, but I look at his last few jobs and I think, have you actually enjoyed this? Mm. I don't mean, you know, he wins things, don't get me wrong. I know he wins, I know he's great at winning, but I don't see enjoyment. He reminds me of when I used to work, like, you know, back in the city days, and we had a guy that worked in the mortgage securities department, and he used to bill 3,000 hours a year and he earned millions of pounds, but he seemed to enjoy the grim process of winning, but not the actual, you know, and Mourinho doesn't seem to enjoy football. Mm. And I think if you look at the teams that are doing well, the managers enjoy football. They like, and Mourinho, there's, if he's not winning for you, he's not doing anything else.
Yeah.
This is the big problem.
Well, I think the only pleasure that Jose Mourinho has got in the last year or so is stopping Alexis Sanchez from joining Manchester City.
He's been very good at that.
And he, you know, and there's no denying that he only signed Sanchez because he knew that City were that signing away from being unstoppable.
I don't really blame Mourinho here in this scenario. I blame what's going on above Mourinho, because at the end of the day, they've got Alexis Sanchez, who they didn't pay any money for in terms of a transfer fee, but they lost Mkhitaryan, who was hardly a first team regular at that point. But they've made him the most, the highest paid Premier League player.
I'm going to be a bit less charitable than Ryan and not let Mourinho off so easily, because although United have structural problems, I agree with that absolutely, Mourinho has still had money to spend, and an elite coach should be getting far better out of that squad. Antonio Conte with the same players would be doing a much better job. Sarri with those players would be doing a much better job. I think that's, to me, that's unquestionable.
They all would.
Absolutely. The concern I have with United and the longer term problem is there are people who own that club and who run that club who don't actually like football.
Yeah.
And this is clear, because if you actually liked football, you'd have a sense for how fans felt, you'd be on the forums, you'd be engaging people a bit better, you'd be, you know, you'd have an ear to the ground. But someone like Ed Woodward, you know, he very much looks like a banker who is using United as an income stream for his clients.
Absolutely.
The Glazers are his clients and he is their banker, and they're just making sure the money keeps rolling in.
You've hit the nail on the head, and United fans have been warning of this situation for what?
How 13 long? Years?
Yeah, over a decade, definitely.
The way that they're set up is to win now, and they're so far away from winning now. As a United fan, and this is coming from someone who supports a club who were really, really good and then had to go through a very long process of not winning something for a while, but there was a clear plan there. You know, it was moving to a stadium, pulling the kind of financial side of it in a little bit, and playing youth players for a long time. And with United, I'm not sure, I mean, I can't speak, you're a United fan, so maybe you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think if United fans saw a plan in place that meant, right, this is clear we're not going to win anything maybe for the next few years, but there's a process here, like, you know, you've still got a really, really good crop of young players in that squad who aren't getting the development or the minutes that they probably need in order to fully flourish, and they're not getting the coaching either. So I think it would be a lot more palatable if they were like, right, we're going to remove these kind of like win now aspects of it and really put forward a plan so that we're going to seriously compete. And I mean seriously, seriously compete for a long sustained period of time in 4, 5, 6 seasons time.
Well, this is the thing. That's a great point. I think there's now the astonishing gamble of potentially appointing Zinedine Zidane. And I say astonishing gamble because here's someone who obviously won 3 Champions Leagues, but had a squad that was basically like, you know, an elite. It's probably the greatest.
Inherited.
I mean, it's probably the greatest squad we've seen. Mm. Probably the greatest squad we've seen, you know, in modern times, and just in terms of sheer talent, technical ability, for position for position. I mean, these are all-time great players in almost every single position.
Yeah, Zidane made a couple of tweaks here and there. James Rodriguez was let go. But ultimately, his role was to manage egos, not the, well,
the training ground minutiae, the nuances. If you appointed somebody like Sarri, and some might say this is hindsight because of how he's done at Chelsea, but I was on this anyway. If you appoint someone who is like a Tuchel-type character, who is that surgical character who goes in and is forensic, you know, Tuchel going to United would give me far greater comfort than Zidane going, because Tuchel, you can see someone improve players. Zidane has done that with players like Vasquez and so on. And his use of Rodriguez actually was quite courageous. The way he dropped Rodriguez, I think, for 2 finals was actually quite gutsy. Yeah. He does have guts.
Yeah.
But to bring Zidane and put him in charge of a squad that is disintegrating. I mean, there was this incredible stat, and they published a stat of the players who've been at United the longest. And I won't name names because I don't want to sort of shame people. It doesn't seem fair. But I remember going, thinking, these players should not have been United for that long. Mm. The richest club in the world should not have players like this anywhere near its squad, its first team squad. Mm. That's part of the problem. Not just the underinvestment, because big money's been spent on these players. It's just the complete lack of strategic planning and understanding of who is a good player and who isn't a good player. It's real, really concern.
Yeah. That's why United's next appointment, we're assuming that Mourinho will go, but it does seem that way.
I'm proud to say that I wrote a piece 6 weeks ago saying Mourinho should go. I got absolutely no hate for it online because I think I couched it in such polite terms.
And you didn't post it.
Well, do you know what? Can I just listen? Let me defend my honour. It was posted on the ESPN FC site. I didn't tweet it. That's correct.
That is the classical, like, yeah, I'll do this piece for you.
Left it on the site. Do you know what this is? I wish I could say it's fake news, but it's not. I wish I could defend my honour, but I don't have any.
Him.
Oh, that's that is devastating.
Rumble.
That's a classic.
In serious news, whatever the next appointment is for United, it's so big.
I agree.
I think it's arguably bigger now than the appointment after Ferguson, because they've not put in a serious title challenge since he left, to finish second last season, but they were never really in any danger of winning the league. No one was, apart from Man City. And to have fallen away so dramatically, they may still turn it around. I mean, you know, we're only, what, 6, 7 games in. But still, I think the next one is key, and I'm not entirely sure that a coach like Zidane is the right choice. But then again, it's such a hard one to gauge. I mean, would they go for someone, you know, like Ralf Hasenhüttl, for example?
Who they won't take chances. No, they won't. No, they'll go for a big. They'll go for a Zidane.
Yeah, and it seems very reactive. You know, Gary Neville wrote a really good tweet, I think, yesterday or just after the weekend, saying that this started when they got rid of Moyes and it kick-started a chain reaction. At
I disagree.
Level.
No, but can I say, I'm sorry to jump in there, but I disagree with Neville on that. I think he's being a real loyalist there because David Moyes should never have got the job. And Neville has consistently said that no one showed enough faith in Moyes. He could have turned it around. There was never any indication.
I'm not sure if that was what he was alluding to. I think it was more that it kick-started a chain of reactions that you, of decisions that you saw at board level, not necessarily Moyes in particular, but that has led to where they are now, where they have someone who, you know, this gigantic personality in charge who is clearly losing his way, and they're no real closer to being that force that they were when Moyes was in charge. I mean, it's their worst, well, people say it's their joint worst league start for 29 years, but I think actually on goal difference it's their worst.
It definitely feels like their worst.
Mourinho has elevated United from where they were under Van Gaal. That is true. They finished second last year. They weren't competing, as you said, but Mourinho does deserve some credit for restoring some kind of order, because the club was in more disarray then than it even is now, I would say. But I think a series of poor decisions from the top is hampering them.
They just all have to step up. Like, Mourinho, I think, is on his way out. Pogba, and you know, my love for Paul Pogba is well known, but just so disappointing.
Pogba will stay so if Mourinho goes.
The issue I have with Pogba, I will say this, is it just seems all so tactical and not strategic. You know, all the talk from the dressing room, Paul Pogba has just won a World Cup. If you've won a World Cup, the amount of leverage you have in the dressing room, the amount of, with the crowd, Paul Pogba could go out every game, play an 8 out of 10, everyone go, oh, are you leaving? Let's talk of Barcelona. So I'm focused on Manchester United. I came back here and my business is unfinished. He should say that after every match and just give Mourinho enough rope to kind of, you know, do whatever with. But instead he comes out, lets Mino Raiola sound off, gives these cut. You think to yourself, it's so strange, because when Pogba played for France, he looked like an elder statesman. He looked like Paul Newman in Road to Perdition. And you see him, you know, you see him like, you know, talk about United. It's like Macaulay Culkin. It's like, come on, dude, like, where is the mature Pogba of the dressing room giving speeches before the Uruguay game and saying, you know, next round, let's do that. You know, where is that Paul Pogba that we saw in the summer?
Yeah, is that anywhere in the dressing room though, really? You know, that's the thing. Who is the player to do that? I mean, is it Ashley Young? Is that why he's captain? You know, it's
that's extraordinary. Like, Ashley Young, and look, Ashley Young has outperformed, I think, almost all expectations in terms of his fullback role. But for Ashley Young to be anywhere near the Manchester United captaincy is part of the problem. Ashley Young is basically a player who has outperformed but shouldn't be in that position. You should have players like Modric and Kroos in those roles.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, they've got a couple of tricky games coming up as well. So, I mean, is this going to get worse? Is it going to get better? I mean, Valencia in the Champions League hasn't happened at the time of recording. I know I think Lingard's not going to play for a quote-unquote groin injury. He was also left out of the matchday squad at the weekend, but there was no report of an injury then, I believe.
Yeah, it was a tactical.
The problem is, actually, it all looks tricky at the moment, I have to say.
It's a bit of a mess from you know, organisational level through to selection level. There's no, you know, I mean, when was the last time a United team was unchanged from the game before? I can't remember.
Grim times, my friends, grim times at Old Trafford. Well, with that in mind, let's make a transition away. Thank goodness for me. Let's take a break, and after that we'll be discussing the Bundesliga. So we're back and we're talking Bundesliga. Exciting times in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, thrilling times. It was a great, great weekend for the neutral. I mean, the big game of the weekend was actually Bayer Leverkusen versus Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund were 2-0 down at halftime. Didn't really look like they were up to much. And then just produced a thrilling fight back. And the second half was great by them. Leverkusen just fell apart, but Dortmund are now top of the league. And I mean, Marco Reus was fantastic in that game. Jadon Sancho, we saw some great stuff from him. He came off the bench within 1 minute, had assisted Royce's equaliser. And Sancho now has 5 assists, which is more than anyone else in Europe's top 5 leagues.
And he's only played 124 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think he's even started a game.
No.
Which is quite staggering.
There was some stat about how that's actually a record, isn't it? Like in terms of stats per minute, in terms of the start to a season,
yeah.
It's a record, I think.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I can believe it. Yeah, quite amazing. And his continued growth in the Bundesliga should be an example to English players, young English players that are looking for a breakthrough. But yeah, I mean, Borussia Dortmund were great and they're now top of the league, and the Bundesliga now has a different complexion because Bayern Munich were beaten for the first time this season. They lost 2-0 right here in Berlin on Friday night. It was a stirring performance by Hertha, who are looking really good themselves. And it looks like, I mean, it's still extremely early days, but we could have some kind of title race this year. Let's hope.
Now, Hertha are interesting, Ryan, because you've been keeping an eye on them for a while, haven't you? And their manager, who's done some pretty interesting things the last couple of years.
Well, I think it's a club that you don't see a lot of coverage of outside of Germany. You know, a lot of people know about it. I mean, we're all from England, and we have a lot of friends back there who want to talk a little bit about Hertha, but they don't really know too much about like Pal Dardai, who, you know, is an expert Hertha player who took over a few years ago. And they've not been unbelievable in the last few years, but you know, they only came back up in 2013, I think, right, from when they won Bundesliga 2.
Yeah.
Apart from 1 year, they were a little bit close. I think it was Dardai's first year in charge. They've kind of solidified a little bit, you know, and I think he's someone who doesn't get talked a lot about in terms of managers in Germany. But yeah, they're looking good, and they're kind of slowly, hopefully, on a process to, you know, moving a little bit up into the higher end of the table.
Yeah, I mean, Dardai's first full season, I mean, he took over as caretaker for a little while, his first full season in charge. They could even have made the Champions League places. I think they eventually tailed off in the last couple of weeks of the season. But what's really interesting with him is that, I mean, he knows, as you said, Hertha inside out. He was a player there. He's a one club man, and he's only ever coached at club level Hertha. But he has built over 3.5 years this really, really solid foundation, and so solid that it's incredibly dull sometimes.
Yeah.
That's up until this season, though. They've got a couple of new signings, and a guy who's been there for a couple of years, Duda, who hasn't, there was talk of him going in the summer because he hadn't really done it. He scored the second goal against Bayern, and it was a fantastic goal. And he's an example of a player who is really, he's got that little bit more flair. So we're seeing a slightly different side from Hertha this season, and Bayern, to be quite honest, had absolutely no answer.
Yeah, I think we spoke about Duda a few weeks ago, and when he got that brace, was it against Leipzig? I think he scored 2 against
He only
scored 2 goals last season, and he's already got 5, and he's top scorer in the Bundesliga at the moment, which Hertha having a top scorer, you know, after what, 5-6 games this season is pretty decent.
Yeah, I really like the kind of Diego Simeone approach of returning to a club that you played for and returning it to former glory. You know, building on a base of defensive strength, resilience, then kind of opening up with a bit more flair. This is very much what he did, you know, Simeone did at Atletico, obviously on a greater scale, but also sort of Juan Verón at Estudiantes, kind of restoring clubs. Because as we know, Hertha is a funny club because it's got this huge stadium in a city that doesn't necessarily go that wild about football all the time. So it's really nice of them to get their place in the sun.
I think it was quite important that, because Dardai knows Hertha inside out, and his first target was to make sure that they didn't slip back down into the second league and to make them solid and hard to beat. And we saw it in something similar in the Premier League with Burnley last season. They've just built on that defensive solidity. But now Dardai is letting his hair down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they yo-yoed for a bit, didn't they? I mean, they went down and they won the Bundesliga 2 in 2011, went down again in 2012, won the Bundesliga 2 in 2013. And, you know, they've kind of been in the Bundesliga since.
Mm.
Talking about Manchester United earlier, on the flip side, this is a very solid process for Hertha, and it's a slow process. Mm. And sometimes, like Michael said, it hasn't been the most exciting. You know, two top scorers in the top 5 or something at the moment. And
very impressive.
And they've got these two old men up front, you know, Ibisevic and Kalou, but they're still doing the business. I mean, Ibisevic, I think, is 34, Kalou 33. But they've got such a great understanding. And it's that mixture between these kind of older, more experienced guys and then these new fresh blood and a bit more flair. It's a really nice balance there at the moment. And it's an exciting future for Hertha, actually. They've got a new stadium. I mean, you mentioned the stadium, but it's not a permanent solution. They've got a new stadium on the way.
Which will be smaller, I think. Right?
Slightly, yeah, it will actually be significantly smaller. I think it will be 50,000, but still quite big, right next to, on the old Olympic Park site, so still very close to where they are at the moment. And yeah, they do struggle to fill that Olympiastadion for games that are not Bayern and Dortmund, but they still have a significant fan base and they're a big club here in Germany.
I think it'll be better for them, that 50,000, because I was checking their average attendance recently last season. It was about 44,000, 45,000.
Yeah, it really sells out.
Really, actually, but that's a great, you know, you get a stadium for 50 and reduce a couple of prices, you could fill that and the atmosphere is so much better.
Exactly. And you think of clubs like Newcastle in England, they have that average attendance and, you know, they're considered one of the best supported clubs in England.
Yeah, I mean, Juve did it a few years ago, moving from the Dele Alpi to, well, what is it, the Allianz Stadium now. Just smaller stadium, better atmosphere. I think for a club like Hertha, I think that will be really, really impactful because the Olympiastadion can be very cold, very cavernous, and not the best place to watch football.
Before we move on from the Bundesliga completely, Schalke, they picked up their first win finally, six games in. Tedesco was starting to come under a little bit of pressure. I don't think there was any serious danger of him being fired, but he did need that first win. They got it against Mainz. And they're up and running. Leipzig won as well. So they're back in the groove. I think that's two in a row for them.
They beat Hoffenheim, right?
Yeah, big win. Hoffenheim.
The Nagelsmann derby.
Yeah, exactly. I guess in some ways he couldn't lose there.
To be fair to Schalke, though, haven't they been playing quite good football without end product?
Kind of, yeah. They were a bit unlucky in their last game. They played well in the first half, didn't put away a few chances, and then got brutally punished. But
they've not been the most fluid, dynamic
kind
of side under Tedesco. And I think that when the results are happening, it's bearable. And I think that a few, well, maybe even one more, and I think it would have been very touch and go whether he...
It's pragmatic football under Tedesco. It's not always the best to watch, but can get results.
So let's talk Arsenal. Ryan, lots of interesting things happening there. Emery's got them back in towards winning ways, I suppose, and the Aaron Ramsey contract saga is rumbling on.
Yeah, Ramsey, for those who don't know, hadn't signed a new contract. His deal's up at the end of the season. And I think it was David Ornstein reported at the back end of next week, Thursday or Friday, that there was an agreement in place between the club and the player, which was then taken off the table by Arsenal, which is quite strange. There's been a lot of speculation about the timing and why it was taken off the table. Maybe it was something to do with Gazidis leaving for AC Milan, Arsenal's chief executive. Whether Gazidis leaving meant that Emery voiced more of opinion, whether he thought Ramsey was worth the money that they were offering. I don't know how much the offer was, but I imagine that because of the Ozil situation last season, which was very similar, and a lot of people expected him and Alexis Sanchez to leave at the end of last season, Ozil signing a new deal, which I think is reportedly 350 grand a week.
Wow. Eye-watering.
I think that Ramsey wanted somewhere close to that, and I'm a little bit on the fence in terms of how I feel about it, because I think it's clear now that he will, bar something miraculous in January, he will probably go for free at the end of the season. And, you know, I totally would if I was in his position. He's always made a lot of noises about wanting to play in Europe at some point through his career. He's 27 now, he'll be 28 this year, I think.
Well, Arsenal are going to want to sell him in January, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you want to get something back for him. It makes you wonder why there wasn't more action taken in the summer to move him on if it was clear that he wasn't probably going to sign a contract.
Well, that's what indicates to me that there's definitely been some kind of sea change that you referred to there in the last week or so, with Gazidis heading off and maybe Emery somehow getting some more control and having that perhaps he, it seems to me that he has a plan in place, and Ramsey's clearly not part of that.
Well, he... early on in the season, Ramsey was on the bench for the Chelsea game, for example, away. He was taken off a lot earlier in games than Arsene Wenger took him off. Wenger rarely took him off, actually. So I wonder, I mean, there's been a massive change at Arsenal. I think this is something not to be overlooked. I mean, huge changes at operational level across the board from, you know, there's now Raul Sanier is in charge of football. He's the ex-Barcelona director of football. With Gazidis moving, there's a new chief of commercial operations as well. You have Sven Mislintat, who's the head of recruitment, ex-Dortmund. Hasfami, who's ex-Team Sky, who's in at the legal team. And, you know, a lot of the backroom staff left with Wenger. So there's been massive, massive changes. And I think that, not wanting to segue too quickly, but I think one of the plus sides is that, you know, bar the first two games of the season, which were very, very tricky games, at home to Man City and away to Chelsea, 7 wins on the bounce, while still not looking anywhere near settled as a team or a unit yet, I think is quite positive. And with Ramsey, I think that one thing, if we're going to move into like the performance side of stuff with Arsenal, it seems to me that Emery likes him further forward. And unfortunately, I don't think it works quite with him and Ozil playing in that three behind the striker. Ozil's had to move out left or right, and Ramsey's been playing central. And on Saturday, for example, when Ramsey went off and Iwobi came on, not for 1 second suggesting that Iwobi is a better player than Ramsey, but Iwobi wide and Ozil central gave Arsenal instantly more balance, which led to the two goals.
Just seems like he doesn't fit into the plans, and that happens in football.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know Ramsey's a very divisive player for a lot of people, and he gets a lot of stick and, well, a lot of abuse online, which I think is pathetic, to be honest, because I think he's always come across as a hardworking guy. He's never really made any noises. He's never really been problematic. You could never once question his commitment or professionalism. He's scored two winning goals a winning goal in two FA Cup finals. Had a horrific injury at 19, 20 years old. And I think to make it back from that to be the player that he is now is
outstanding,
kind of miraculous.
For Wales, better than Bale in the Euros.
Yeah.
More influential.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've kind of spoke a lot recently about British players going abroad. And I think that if Ramsey goes in the summer on a free, I think there's going to be some really, really big clubs after him.
Yeah.
I was going to say that, actually. I would love Ramsey to go to the continent for two reasons. One is selfish. The selfish reason being, if he goes to Liverpool, then we are in real trouble, because Ramsey under Jurgen Klopp would be, I think, terrific. I think he would bring out...
That could happen.
I think he'd be extraordinary under Jurgen Klopp. I think he'd be unbelievable.
Yeah.
I think he's a wonderful player and I love him. And I think I'd love to see Ramsey go somewhere like Dortmund, actually, to give them a shot in the arm, or Barcelona, because I think they need to sew together that midfield. That midfield is an absolute mess. And funnily enough, this is not to get too much onto the Pogba situation, but if Pogba goes to Barcelona, I think he's going to struggle a lot more than people think.
Well, this is kind of wasn't on our list to talk about, but Barcelona, people aren't really talking about, they're struggling at the moment, and they have not figured out a way to replace Iniesta, even though he wasn't playing anywhere near the minutes that he was playing last season, the season before, or has been over the years. But actually, Ramsey's not a passer, and Iniesta wasn't just a passer. People kind of think of him and Xavi as just pure tiki-taka, but actually Iniesta's a dribbler.
Break lines.
And Ramsey likes to break lines with the ball at his feet. And
yeah, I mean, there's no point Barcelona even trying to replace him. I mean, there's some players that you just can't.
But you reconfigure the midfield.
Exactly.
You reconfigure.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think from a tactical point of view, I think someone like Ramsey slots in there and actually gives them something that they haven't really had this season.
Well, we're talking of turning points, just a general theme for the podcast, and Barca are in a difficult position because Messi is playing out of his skin. I mean, his numbers, even though he's had a couple of dips last couple of games, Messi's playing out of his skin this year. But the dependency on him is absolutely brutal. That midfield just doesn't seem to have control. And, you know, this season, Barca are really going, I think, for the Champions League in a big way. But that's going to hurt them because, I mean, look, they're competing in a season where Real look revigorated with the sale of Ronaldo. Juve look good with Ronaldo now providing assists. Bayern have, I think, the domestic competition that's going to really set them up well for Champions League run. It's an exciting Champions League and they don't seem that well equipped, I think, for it tactically yet.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing from Barca at the moment is that they haven't had a, you know, no disrespect to the teams that they've played, but they haven't had a really big game to kind of ignite them yet. They rested Messi and a few players on the weekend against Athletic Bilbao. And I think they've got a Clásico coming up in a few weeks, and I think that that will be a really, really big test to see where they're at.
Yeah.
Having mentioned Ronaldo in relation to the Champions League, it would be remiss not to mention the resurfacing of sexual assault allegations against him brought by Der Spiegel a couple of years ago, and they've returned now to prominence. There are great places to check out further discussion of these issues. I think Second Captain's podcast, they've done a great segment on it.
Yep, the journalist who wrote the piece for Der Spiegel, his name escapes me, sorry about that. He was on yesterday's episode, and also a really good podcast to check out is the Unusual Efforts podcast, which is Kirsten Schlawitz and Jesse Losch. They did a whole episode about it yesterday, and yeah, I recommend it. It's a very good listen. It's something that is obviously very troubling, and I don't think talk too much about stuff here because it's I think it's actually the case is being reopened now by Las Vegas police. Yeah. Read the Der Spiegel piece on it. It's in English as well.
Good to see these issues being explored fully, and I hope there's a speedy resolution. It seems like something's dragged on for a while. Glad it's being aired. Michael, anything else in the world of football on a lighter note that's going on? We're seeing, can I just say?
Spurs' new ground has got grass now.
Well, so almost. The grass has arrived.
Yes, we saw you looking at pictures on your phone. Very excited. The turf being laid. Yeah. Sorry to shame you.
Yeah, I'm quite excited about that.
Can I say as well?
I'm just desperate to get away from Wembley.
He's actually got it as his background picture.
Oh, come on.
On his phone.
Can I throw this in as well? Because, sorry to be rude, but I have to say this because whenever United get defeated, it's always framed as crisis for the club. And people often don't give credit to the club that beat them. So I want to give credit to West Ham because they had a great win over Macclesfield in the Carabao Cup, 8-0. And the 3-1 win is part of a trajectory of improvement for them. And like, that has to be said. You know, we often talk about United being in crisis, but it's also the clubs at West Ham improving. Shout out to Wolves as well. Another win, I think 5 unbeaten now against Southampton, which is really great. Everton pulling it back against Fulham, who are struggling themselves, but good to see Everton returning to some kind of form.
Well, we did a podcast. Was it the first or second one we said we were really worried about West Ham? Because they did look in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of pleased that they've turned around. They had a few tactical shifts. Declan Rice has been playing in midfield a little bit, which is really good.
Rice was really impressive.
He's been great. He was good against Everton as well.
Yeah. I'm just really impressed with how West Ham kept their heads after that terrible start. I mean, it was a really tough start against some top teams, but it could have all just fallen apart. But Pellegrini is the kind of guy you want in a crisis. You know, he's not going to lose his head or anything. But Wilshere was in the team in those early games, and I think he got injured. But he's not getting back into that team.
No, they look a lot more balanced. They look a lot more steady. I think Pellegrini gave him an extra few days off after I think it was their fourth defeat on the bounce, and I think that seemed to have shifted a lot of the attitude and kind of turned it all a bit more positive. And Yarmolenko was wearing shirts that fit him. So that's where the key change was.
Well, I want to also just say a note of respect to coaches who try something and have their methods proved right over time, because it must be so difficult those first few games when you're playing, you're losing matches and it's not quite clicking. And then people are trusting in the methods. You know, Emery is still working on stuff, but they're trusting him. The players trust him. West Ham, they're turning things around. And you look at, again, with Derby beating United in the Carabao Cup. And again, a real reward for Lampard's methods. They're doing all right, actually, in the Championship. But the way they played at Old Trafford, they just came out, you know, Tom Wilson playing their football, was really great to see.
And also Darren Moore in the Championship, West Brom on top. And, you know, sticking with him after, I mean, he did a fairly good job.
A great job.
I mean, yeah, even though they went down last season. But he's really got them going. And I think Jay Rodriguez came out and said something, how, you know, was praising him and his attitude to the players and stuff like that. And that's really good to see. You know, Burnley did that with Sean Dyche when they got relegated and stuck with him, and they said he was never in danger of losing his job, and he got them back up, and now they're kind of reaping that reward, you know. And I spoke to a friend of mine yesterday who's a Huddersfield Town fan, and he was saying that even though they're struggling, and they are struggling, they can't score goals, and they don't really seem to have taken a step forward after solidifying last season in the Premier League. All the noises are that they will stick with David Wagner whether they go down or not. So it's good to see in a way that there's that kind of faith in the managers.
And, yeah, and it puts the onus on the players.
Yeah, definitely.
Know?
Yeah, and, you know.
Maybe I'm jumping in here with a sort of a premature thought, but maybe we're in an era where people are valuing coaches like we valued elite strikers, elite players, because hanging on to a guy like Chris Hughton, hanging on to a guy like Eddie Howe, you know, Bournemouth doing really, really well in the Premier League right now, like looking really good, bouncing back from the loss against Burnley, having defeated, I think, Leicester 4-2 before that, and they bounced back with a win against Crystal Palace. Eddie Howe's doing very well. And I want to sort of mention as well, Chris Hughton's part of that, because Brighton have had some really great results. And even their 2-0 defeat against Man City, they were incredibly streetwise, to the extent that City really had to work to break them down.
Even against Spurs, you know, they kind of were good, and they caused Spurs a few problems, and, you know, could have grabbed a point from that game as well. They're now becoming a team that you don't really want to go to, actually, for a big club, which I think is, if you're a Premier League side and you want to establish yourself as a Premier League regular, I think becoming somewhere that's hard to go to is a really good sign.
They're almost like the new West Brom, not in the footballing terms, Brighton, because they play a different type of game, but in terms of that resilience and in terms of maximising resources and just a supremely well-coached team. Whenever people came away from playing West Brom, they'd be like, that team is coached so well. And I think a similar thing, they've got more flair, Brighton, but when you come away from playing Brighton, you've been in a game, wherever you are.
Yeah, definitely.
Before we wrap up, we should talk a little bit about the Champions League. Some big games coming up this week.
Sorry, man, all my eyes are on Karabag Arsenal on Thursday. So all this is just a warm-up.
Long trip for you guys.
I'm not going.
All right.
But yeah, I'll be sat at home watching it. From
any games exciting you, Michael?
Tottenham Barcelona.
Ooh,
goodness me.
That's on Wednesday night.
Bayern Ajax is my nostalgic fave of the week.
Yeah.
Glorious.
Just looks nice written down, doesn't it?
Can I just, the quick Hugh McIlvany quote about the Champions League draw from years ago, I want to use it this time. He said, a Champions League draw so sizzling it could have been made with an oven glove. Tottenham, Barca, Bayern, Ajax, that's pretty, pretty strong.
Yeah, that's nice. Napoli, Liverpool, that's on Tuesday night.
That's in Napoli, right?
Yeah, that should be a really good game. And also, it's worth mentioning as well that Monaco returned to Dortmund, which of course was a fateful game back in 2017 when a bomb went off on the Dortmund bus. So that would be an emotional game for both teams, because it wasn't that long ago and many of the players will still be there. So yeah.
Musa, looking forward to Man United Valencia?
No. No, I shouldn't say this because it's unprofessional and it's maybe not, you know, the best fans approach, but I just don't enjoy... I don't look forward to Manchester United games at the moment. I approach them with a sense of dread. I hope we do well. I hope that Luke Shaw continues to be as brilliant on the pitch as he's been outspoken off it. He's been terrific this year for us, and he's taken a leadership role. I love what he said against West Ham, saying that we were horrendous, we were awful. I love how he's now got the confidence to be a spokesman, and he is the bright spot of the season. So if nothing else, I look forward to watching him.
Yeah, definitely.
Well said.
Gentlemen, once again, it's been a pleasure. Despite my club being in an ailing state, the state of football in general, I think, is pretty good, actually, considering the Doom and Gloom podcast we had last week, the future, the end of football, the end of history. No, joking aside, great to speak to you as ever.
Thanks, man.
Thank you so much, audience, for joining us. You can find us on all social media platforms, at RabonaMag, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.